Hey now. Offshore Explorer podcast back. First episode of 2021. It's been an eventful year so far, for me at least. Fished the International Masters Tournament in Costa Rica. And had a good turnout there, and a good showing for me personally, and was able to come back with the win. That'll be the focus of today's episode. Want to talk about that tournament and how it went for me. And then I got COVID. 99% sure I got COVID on the flight back from Costa Rica. Because I had tested negative the day before my flight and then got sick, you know, the next day. So somehow got COVID on the flight. That sucked. That took me out for about 2 weeks. And then, you know, it's been over a month now, so back to 100%. But that was a bummer. And then, you know, there's been a lot going on in the conservation world, in terms of controversy and things going on. There was a whole conflict between the surfers and fishermen, that was kind of tipped off or instigated by the World Surf League, and their support of a 30 by 30 initiative, which is, you know, the idea is to protect, try and protect 30% of the world's oceans by the year 2030. And the problem is, that sounds great on paper, but one of the big underlying aspects of that is MLPAs, or marine protected areas. And it's a very hot button item for fishermen, especially in California, where some really, you know, important and cherished fishing spots got gobbled up by the MLPAs about 10 years ago. And, you know, the fear is that under the creation of the 30 by 30 initiative, that, you know, the one of the things that they want to do is create a lot more MLPA areas. And what that means to fishermen is loss of, you know, loss of fishing grounds. You know, it's less area for commercial fishermen, and it just kind of handcuffs people that are out, you know, enjoying the oceans in a sustainable and you know, very important way. So anyhow, that kicked off a big social media melee. Fishermen against surfers, surfers against fishermen, pro surfers getting threatened, you know, eco kind of surf, ocean brands getting trashed because they sponsor surfers that, you know, were sponsored by the WSL and whatnot. You know, AFCO got involved and was really promoting the fisherman side of it. CCA was on board with that. That all eventually died down. I think everyone, cooler heads prevailed. And ultimately, I mean, if you really want to boil it down, you know, 99% of surfers fish and vice versa. So we all want the same thing. We all want clean, unpolluted water, unpolluted oceans. We want sustainable fisheries. We want access. We want access to surf spas. We want access to fishing grounds. So, you know, it's just going to come down to, in the next few years, trying to work together and get that stuff accomplished. Then the other thing that's kind of been in the news the last few weeks has been the Seaspiracy documentary, and which came out on Netflix. I think it was number one on Netflix for a few weeks. And, you know, the guy that made that movie previously made a film called Cowspiracy. And the whole idea was to shine a light on the industrial meat kind of industry and beef farming, chicken farming, etc., you know, and show the ugly side of that and get people to go vegan. The Seaspiracy was very much in the same tone. You know, there's a lot of sensational pictures of dolphins and marine mammals being killed, mutated fish farming, you know, the whole litany of graphic ocean stuff that nobody wants to see. And, you know, is very impressionable upon people. And there are, let's be honest, there's a plethora of issues that are, you know, the ocean's facing right now. And at the end of the day, though, what, you know, these films are trying to get people to not eat meat. And this film was specifically trying to get people to not eat fish and to consume alternative things to fish, such as, you know, algae flavored shrimp and, or algae replacement for shrimp and all these different funky lab grown products, which is fine. I mean, it's fine for those products to be available for vegans, nothing against that. But I do have problems with casting shadows on American fishermen and specifically, you know, people that are out there sustainably fishing and following all the rules and guidelines that have been set forth. There's lots of guys that are hardworking, great fishermen that are providing a healthy, protein-rich product. And I think we need to be building those guys up and promoting that instead of trying to group everyone that fishes under this shadow or dark cloud of, you know, people that are just out to exploit the ocean. So, you know, I think, like, at the end of the day, if people really care about the oceans, the best thing you can do, in my opinion, is to, you know, make sure you're eating American caught seafood. If that means when you're at a restaurant, it's asking where the fish is caught. If it was caught in, you know, Asia or South America, generally, that's a fish that you should stay away from. And if it was caught by American fishermen, you know, it was caught sustainably and legally. Anything that comes from outside the United States is kind of a mystery. And most of the time it was not caught, you know, hook and line or some sort of, method with a minimal bycatch. It was probably caught with gill nets or long lines or some other type of destructive fishing methods that we really need to start transitioning away from. You know, if you can afford to buy pole caught fish, that's great. And that's probably should be the number one method. But if you just go into it with the idea that you're going to buy American caught seafood only, I think you're pretty good. And it should be as simple as that. I mean, no need to carry around a pamphlet that kind of describes which fish are threatened and whatnot. Just stick to American seafood, American fishermen, and I think you're pretty good. At least it, like, keeps it simple that way, and we're supporting an industry that's important. And, you know, we avoid supporting industries that are destructive. At the end of the day, that the only way to really shut down the industrial fishing complex is to do it with your wallet. And, you know, demanding the restaurants that you frequent and saying, hey, you know, we're only going to purchase seafood here if it's American caught. I mean, that can create, you know, a domino effect and really make a difference in the long run. Obviously, it's a big hill to climb, and we're not going to get there overnight or anytime soon, but it's the small little baby steps that will probably wind up making a difference in the long run. So aside from that, the big news for me personally, fishing wise, was the Masters tournament, which took place last month down in Costa Rica. I've been fishing the tournament every year now, I think, for the past 13, 14 years. And there's a lot of very good fishermen. Most of the guys are out of Florida. And then there's a few others kind of from all around different parts of the states. And what makes the Masters such a unique tournament is the format. So the way it works is the day before the tournament, they do a boat draw and an angler draw. And for the 3 days of fishing, you fish on a different boat each day. The idea with that is being that obviously there's certain boats that, you know, with better captains, better crew, better bait, they're going to get more bites than other boats. So the idea is you kind of rank the boats, split them up into three categories, and that way everyone gets a boat from the A, B, and C category each day. And over the course of 3 days, everyone fishes on an A, B, and C boat. Each day you fish with a different angler. And every hour of each day, you switch sides of the boat. We've all been fishing or trolling when, you know, it's the starboard side of the boat's getting all the bites. If you're the guy on the starboard side of the boat the whole day, you know, you might wind up with 12 bites and the guy on the port side gets none. So in just an effort to make it as standardized and as take the, you know, that sort of element out of the equation, you switch sides every hour. Obviously, you know, I've had plenty of times where the fish follow me or vice versa, where, you know, every time you switch, there's a bite on the other side of the boat. It sucks. It sucks if you're the guy that's not getting bites. But it does happen. But the whole point of doing the switching sides is to sort of try and balance it out over the course of 3 days. So in any event, the first day of the tournament, I drew a Maverick boat, the Go Fly. And then the second day I had a Viking boat called the Vaquero. And the third day, another Viking boat called the Molgener or something along those lines. It's impossible to pronounce Viking word. It's like Thor's hammer, I think it means. But good captain. And good captains all 3 days. There's really not a... There's not really a subpar boat in the tournament, in my opinion. And the other thing, like I was going to say earlier about the format, is aside from, you know, the standardization of the boats and switching anglers, et cetera, is it's a dead boat tournament, meaning as soon as you hook up, the captain has to throw the boat into reverse to stop the boat from sliding forward. And then the captain is able to turn the boat so that the stern faces the fish. But one engine has to always be in forward and one has to always be in reverse if you're spinning. Like, there's no forward reverse. There's only like turning rotationally in order to keep the angler and the fish in line. So dead boat, you have 10 minutes to catch the fish. So the way it works is you start with 100 points and every 30 seconds you lose 5 points. So for example, if you hooked up and you caught a fish in 20 seconds, you got one on the short bait and you hooked him and he just came straight to the boat and you got a 20 second fish, that's 100 points. On the other hand, you hook him on the long rigger, the boat's getting blown down swell, the fish is going up swell, you get stretched out and you get the fish in 9 minutes and 45 seconds. Well, you get 5 points for that. So you really need to try and get these fish in as quick as possible. But you do have to be careful. Because if you get a broken line, you get negative points. And, you know, that really screws up your program. So you can't just horse them in. You're not fishing with like 50 pound braid. We're fishing with 30 pound IGFA rated mono. So you can break lines. There's broken lines every year. And so you just need to find that balance, of, you know, getting the fish in quick and putting the wood to them, but just not being stupid. So first day, fished on the Go Fly. I fished with, the guy I fished with on the first day. We both had good days. I think I wound up with like 5 fish. He had 6 fish. And we finished the day at the top of the leaderboard. And he was in number one and I was number two. The second day, I fished on Vaquero and had a really good day. The fishing was pretty slow, I think, the second day. And I, you know, just was getting bites. I was getting good quick times. And, by the end of the second day, I had a pretty good lead. I was in first place and I think I had about, you know, like a 350 point lead or something going into the last day, which is a pretty good lead. It's not insurmountable by any stretch. I had a year where I had a big lead and thought I had a good last day and was surpassed by somebody that just had a crazy day. So, you know, you're never too like comfortable with your leads because, you know, a guy gets all of a sudden gets a couple fast ones and, you know, or they get on like a spot of fish when they're off by themselves and all of a sudden, you know, your lead can evaporate real quick. So went into the third day with a decent lead and didn't get any bites the first, like, I think, I can't remember, but I think like the first 2 hours I didn't get a bite and was starting to get a little nervous. And part of the thing that's hard is when you're sitting on the lead is, you know, you can kind of only hear the radio with boats calling in the fish because you're trying to listen to the radios up in the bridge. And, you know, you don't have like a leaderboard like sitting there where you kind of see where your standings are all the time. You kind of like having to hear or ask the captain what's going on. So I didn't really have a good idea of where I stood. I eventually got a fish, I think, after the second hour, which, you know, made me feel a little better. And then midday, I got another fish. And then I think with like about 30 minutes left, I had like a pretty quick fish, like a minute 30 something fish, which is 85 points. And I kind of had a feeling at that point, like, cause the fishing hadn't been like killer the last day. It was, you know, it was consistent, but not like, you know, you don't hear the radio just chirping like constantly. So I had a pretty good feeling after I got that third fish and that 85 points that I had done enough to win, but I still wasn't sure. And so on the way in, when we finally got radio reception, and I was able to pull up the app on my phone, I was able to see that I had won the tournament, and you know, I was just so stoked. It was back-to-back wins for me and my fourth win overall. So it was really cool. I had my son and my wife down there, and it was the first time they'd ever been there when I won. So it was really cool having them all there at the awards dinner, and having my my son come up and get the trophy with me. It was really cool. You know, my dad got me into this tournament back about 13 years ago, and we used to fish together. So, you know, being able to bring my son down there now and hopefully, you know, he'll be fishing this tournament someday was really special. So that was cool. You know, it was a great tournament. And the fishing was pretty decent overall. And I got the bites. You know, I mean, you know, that's what everyone says in this tournament. You got to get the bites. There's been years where I fished this tournament where you just don't get bites, and there's nothing you can do. I mean, you can't be mad because there's nothing you can do. You're not getting bites. What sucks is when you get bites and you miss fish. You know, you didn't let them eat long enough. You let it eat too long. You weren't paying attention. You were looking at something, like you were distracted, and then, you know, you get a bite in that fraction of a second where you were glancing away, you know, that might've caused you to miss the fish. And that's the stuff that'll eat you up, you know, 'cause in this tournament, winning and losing can come down to 5 points. It can come down to seconds. So, you know, people ask me, like, you know, about what it takes to win, or like, what are some tips and tricks? You know, the only thing I can say is try to pay attention the entire tournament. I mean, it's easy when it's slow and you haven't gotten a bite in like an hour or so. 2 hours sometimes, you know, you get tired, it's hotter in hell, and you know, you just want to sit down or just kind of relax for a minute, and you know, you start daydreaming, or your mind starts wandering off onto something else, and you know, next thing you know, there he is, oh there's a fish, and you're up dicking around with something, boom. You know, you grab your rod, you're kind of scrambling, and he's gone. And it's like, you know, that could have been an 80, 90 point fish right there, you know, just down the drain. That sucks. You know, another thing that sucks is, you know, you get caught up in the chaos and, you know, you do too quick of a hook set. Early on, that was something that I definitely was guilty of doing quite often. You know, I came in as a striped marlin fisherman, and I'm used to dropping back live mackerel, and you have a fish up, you drop the bait back, you feel them eat, you know, count 1, 2, 3, 4, slide it up into strike, and he's there. With these sailfish, you know, a lot of times they like to dog bone it, as they say, where, you know, they'll grab the ballyhoo in the tip of their mouth, kind of swim around with it for a minute before they really, like, you know, take it down the gullet. And, you know, one thing that's really worked for me is to give them a real long feed. And I'm talking like 6-7 seconds. And then here in my mind is the key thing, is to go up real slow on the strike. Like, Don't just throw it into full strike. Bring it up slow. Like, you know, let it take a little drag with like some real light pressure. Let the fish jump, go nuts. And then as soon as he settles down, throw it into full strike. At that point, when you know he's there and you're like, you've been on for like 10 seconds or so and he settles down. If you get him where he's got his head turned, he's coming at the boat, go above the strike, get up on the button. If he's coming at you, throw it above the button and then start hammering. That's how you're going to get the fast fish. You know, and if the fish all of a sudden something spooks him, he goes off, come back off the drag. You know, you don't want to break him at that point. You know, you really got to want to play with the drag. And that's just something that, you know, takes experience. You know, the longer you catch these things, that's where you start to just become second nature. And it's a total feel thing. You know, when I first started fishing in this tournament, with my dad, he brought down, this real sensitive, drag tester so he could set his drags. And he took a piece of electrical tape and wrote the exact weights. And my dad was very like methodical and calculated when it came terms to that sort of thing. Whereas personally for me, it's like, I don't like to even mess with drag scales. I like to do it all from feel. And, you know, it's like, I like to pull the drags before as we're headed out to the grounds, I like to pull the drags, you know, let out some line, pull the drags and set it by feel. I mean, it's, you know, then that's the sort of thing, you know, you're not going to be able to pick up if you're new to fishing, and you should probably stick to the, you know, using a drag scale. But as you fish more and more and you start to get the feel, you know, that's something that's actually really important to develop is that sort of thing. Because intuitively, once you get ingrained with the different feels, it all becomes like second nature. You know, you're not thinking about everything you're doing. It's just happening. So, that's something like I've definitely seen a major progression in since I first started fishing, this tournament and fishing in general. So, you know, that's something I'd say is, you know, just try and pay attention, you know, super pay attention to your baits. You know, another thing that early on when I started fishing tournament, you know, you kind of rely on the crew and the mates and the captain to kind of spot your fish. And I know a lot of guys do. No offense to those guys. They got other things they're doing. They're rigging baits. They're driving the boat. They're looking at the sonar. They're listening to the radio. You got to watch your own baits. You gotta be responsible for watching your own bait. So, you know, I kind of put my main focus on my long bait because it's further out and harder to see, and that's where you're gonna get the line share of your bites. And then having like your peripheral vision or your side vision kind of set on the short. So if you have your main attention focused on the long and then, you know, you get a fish up on your short, boom, you're there on it. It's still within your field of vision. And, you know, you're able to quickly like move from wherever you're stationed to the short bit, to the short rod. You know, generally you're going to have, the way these boats are set up is they have a rocket launcher in the center of the cockpit, and you're going to run your long rigger out of the rocket launcher. And then you're going to have your short rod, in the corner with a drop rigger clip. So, you know, sometimes like those fish that hit the short baits are coming up from underneath. You won't even be able to see them because of the prop wash. When that short rigger pin, the downrigger pin pops, bink, like, instantly, you know, oh, you know, he's there. And then you can focus your attention on that. A lot of times with the long rigger, you got it a ways out there, you know, and a little bit of swell, a little roly poly day, you know, you got lot of action going on, you need to really watch that bait, because it's not as sensitive with the feel, and you'll see the fish before you feel them. Which brings up, you know, the question on method there with the long rigger rod. So there's two trains of thought, and I've seen guys have success with both methods. Some guys like to hold the rod, which is what you do if you're fishing on a team all day. You hold the rod and you're feeling the line, you're there. You know, it's like obviously the best method if you're fishing on a team. But when you have to manage two rods, I personally think it's a disadvantage to hold the rod. The reason being, if you're holding the long rigger rod and you get a fish come up on the short rig or on the short bait, you have to dick around within the adrenaline pumping seconds of putting that rod you're holding back into a rod holder and setting the drag. In that like quick little moment, lots of bad things can happen. You can fumble around putting the rod in the holder. You can set your drag too high, too low, get a backlash on the long rigger. I've watched so many guys screw that part up. It's just not worth it, in my opinion. So what I like to do, and which most guys do, keep the rod, keep the long rigger rod in the rod holder, and use, you know, what I like to do is take my right hand and kind of rest it on the spool, on top of the spool, the drag set at the lowest amount of drag without line coming off the reel. Keep my right hand on top of the spool, my left hand holding, feathering the line. That way I can feel a bite or a little rod tip or, you know, the sailfish bill hit the bait. I can feel that with my left hand and then immediately drop the drag lever down with my right hand. And the other good thing about that is too, is if, you know, all of a sudden you got a fish on the short bait, your rod's in the rod holder, it's set, the drag's set perfect, and you're only a couple steps, you can go from that rod to the short bait rod in, you know, one stride, and you're not dicking around with trying to get that rod in the rod holder and fiddle around with it. Because in that little like moment, I mean, that's the whole key time of the whole deal. I mean, these fish are real finicky and they feel anything weird, anything like, you know, overt drag or any kind of that line rubs up against their mouth, you know, they're over it. They'll spit that bait out in a second, or you have the drag set too high and you got a Sancocho where you just get the head back. So it's the little tiny things like that that really make the difference. And, you know, I think ultimately will make a difference between, you know, winning and losing this tournament in the long run. It's exhausting. At the end of the day, you're physically, mentally beat. More so mentally, just from trying to stay alert and stay like that high level of alert for 9 hours. You know, the sun beating down on you and whatnot sucks. But, you know, with these performance shirts and hats and sunscreen and neck gaiters and all the different stuff, you know, the sun's not as bad as it, you know, it used to be. So, you know, I think, you know, stay hydrated, stay alert. You know, the other thing too is like, you know, sometimes you'll get fishing with somebody that likes to talk a lot. You know, that I really like, not trying to be a dick, but I don't really like want to be distracted with talking either. I mean, it's a, you know, little like here and there, it's fine, but I just want to like sit there, stand there, stay focused, watch my bait. And, you know, at the end of the day, when we're headed back in, you know, it's a long run in and out, then you can chew the fat. But to just stay, I mean, this is a tournament, this is competitive. To stay locked in, watch your bait, you know, it's little things like that that I think make a difference in the long run. So in any event, that was the 2021 International Masters, and I was stoked to win. Already frothing for next year. I love the camaraderie. I love the challenge of the tournament. The format, I think, makes it as even a playing field as you can ask for. Everyone fishing with the same line, different boats, no home court advantage there. And if you're really like wanting to just challenge yourself physically, mentally, and against some of the best anglers in the world, it's really a killer tournament. And then, you know, the next few things up on the calendar is the White Sea Bass Tournament, the Tuna Club White Sea Bass Tournament, which is coming up in the beginning of June. And, you know, hopefully the sea bass will show up soon. It's been really slow so far this year on the sea bass front. I don't know if it's the cold water or what, but it's been slow as it gets there. And then we'll have the summer marlin tournaments. And then the big new thing that I'm real excited about is the Deep Drop, IGFA Deep Drop Swordfish Open, Southern California Swordfish Open, which is going to be the first annual in November. And I've been part of that task force and with a bunch of other guys. And we're putting together a really killer event. Hopefully we'll get a big turnout of local guys fishing that. And that's going to be really exciting to see, as it'll be the first deep drop tournament focused solely on deep dropping tournament in Southern California. So that's real exciting. We got some killer sponsors. We're going to have some killer awards, trophies, the whole deal. It's going to be epic. And, you know, we'll be talking about that a lot between now and then. So real excited about that. Anyhow, hope you guys enjoyed the recap of the Masters. And I think we'll be having a pod here soon, kind of just breaking down the Seaspiracy propaganda and fact and fiction there. And we'll hopefully have some sea bass stuff happening and all that. All right. Hope everyone's good. Take care.